From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo's former top aide, Joe Percoco, was found guilty of bribery and conspiracy. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the impact, if any, on New York's governor. And we'll take you to Columbia High School in East Greenbush, where students organized an assembly as part of this week's National School Walkout Day. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. A federal jury found Governor Andrew Cuomo's former top aide, Joe Percoco, guilty on three counts of bribery and conspiracy to commit honest services fraud in a Manhattan courtroom this week. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Percoco, Cuomo's former closest aide, who's been described as being like a brother to the governor, was found guilty of participating in two bribery schemes where he netted nearly $300,000. One of the schemes involved a job for Percoco's wife, where she did little work. The position was created by a power plant company that had business before the state and was seeking help gaining permits to build a plant in the Hudson Valley. The other scheme involved a Syracuse-based developer that had received contracts under Governor Cuomo's economic development programs. The jury found Percoco received $35,000 in bribes in exchange for helping the company beat back a labor agreement and get reimbursed for funds owed to them by the state. The U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, Jeffrey Berman, said in a statement that Percoco was found guilty of selling something priceless that was not his to sell, his position in state government, and that every school child knows Percoco's actions violated the basic tenets of a democracy.
I'm reassured by the verdict.
Susan Lerner heads the government reform group Common Cause.
12 everyday New Yorkers could cut through all of the confusion and get to the main point, which is that the conduct that was introduced at trial was not only wrong, it was illegal and corrupt.
Two of Percoco's three co-defendants in the trial were not convicted on any of the charges. The jury found Core Development Company founder Stephen Aiello guilty on one count of bribery. Percoco got a raise for Aiello's son, Stephen Aiello Jr., who was then a lower-level aide at the governor's office. Core official Joseph Girardi was found not guilty on any of the charges. The jury, which had deliberated for over a week, deadlocked on whether the power plant company official, Competitive Power Ventures' Peter Galbraith Kelly, committed any crimes. Cuomo's political opponents seized on the verdict. State Senator and GOP candidate for Governor John DeFrancisco says testimony in the trial showed that when Percoco was off the state payroll for most of 2014 and managing Cuomo's reelection campaign, he continued to use his state offices and privileges, making 837 phone calls and meeting with other Cuomo aides.
When everybody understands he is a micromanager of the first degree. And to suggest he knew nothing about Percoco doing these things while in his office making 800 phone calls is just beyond credulity.
And the head of the state's Republican Party, Ed Cox, renewed calls for probes by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office and the State Ethics Commission on whether Cuomo himself was involved in any wrongdoing. Cuomo was not charged with any crimes by the federal prosecutor or implicated in Percoco's deeds. The governor, in a statement, said he finds the verdict personally painful because he has known Percoco for a long time. But he says he respects the jury's decision and agrees that there is no tolerance for any violation of the public trust. Reformers, including Blair Horner with the New York Public Interest Research Group, say they hope the verdict will finally spur the governor and lawmakers to fix flaws in the system that led to the conviction.
By any definition, Albany has a corruption problem, and the governor and the legislature have a responsibility to fix it.
Horner says the Prococo case is the first of a string of corruption trials that will play out over the next several months, keeping the issue in the spotlight. The two top former legislative leaders face retrial on corruption charges, and officials involved in Cuomo's signature Buffalo Billion economic development program go to court in the spring. Prococo will be sentenced on June 11th. He faces up to 20 years in prison. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, as we just heard from our Karen DeWitt, the verdicts came in. A federal jury found Governor Andrew Cuomo's former top aide, Joe Prococo, guilty on three counts of bribery and conspiracy to commit honest services fraud. And many, including your regular correspondent, Ken Lovett of the New York Daily News, say the governor has some explaining to do.
Well, everybody's saying the governor has some explaining to do. The governor says he's been personally affected by this. But in the end, you know, he was the chief. He was sitting there. He hires this guy, Prococo, who is his top man and for years his top guy and is basically the guy who is running the government. And he leaves him. He has enough confidence in him to leave him alone and to let him do this stuff. Now, are we sure that that Prococo will go to jail? No. You know, this theft of honest services is a very tough law. We know that the Supreme Court has left enough barn doors open for an awful lot of people to get off after they were convicted. So by no means would I say that it's a done deal. Nevertheless, this 8-week trial certainly showed how New York state government works, and it is the big ugly, as they say. It's really awful. And, you have a lot of hypocrisy. You have the governor saying he doesn't like the LLCs, which are these phony ways of getting extra money without holding anybody accountable. And then he takes a ton of it himself. And, you know, I'm sure what he's saying is, well, when they change the law, I'll change my ways. Come on now. If you're going to lead, you lead by example. So this doesn't look good. On the other hand, I would say right now he's still the favorite to be governor for a third term. He's got $30 million in the bank. It's the year of Trump. He may have a problem in a primary. As you know, the activist Cynthia Nixon, the actress, will be running against her. We'll be running against him, we think, but we're not even sure of that. There will be name recognition on her part. The subways aren't doing well. Cuomo has staked out his claim that he's in charge of the subways. So in New York City, where he wins big, that could be his undoing.
Something else that might be an undoing or at least a wedge in the issue of endorsements, and that is the Working Families Party. You spoke with Bill Lipton, the head of the party, this week for your Capital Connection program, and revisited the history that the party has in the last election in 2014 with the governor, noting the current trial and what has happened and the Working Families Party agenda. And he indicated, they're going to take a good look this time.
Well, that's what he said. You know, the last time the mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio, came in and saved Andrew Cuomo's keister. And made a plea that the party would endorse Cuomo. Now, we all know about the Working Families Party. Much of the money that it takes to run a major organization like that comes from the labor unions, and the labor unions are firmly with Cuomo. So the idea that they're going to take their heart in their hands and perhaps do something that would alienate their major funder, I think, is a little bit far-fetched. So they'll make noises, they'll say it's going to be competitive, but, you know, remember that it is a democratic institution in that people get to vote. And that's what scared them the last time, that there was enough animus towards Cuomo that they might give it to de Blasio, that they might give it to Zephyr Teachout. And, they didn't do it. It's awful in that the rest is history. And I expect the same thing is going to happen this time, although you never know.
On the Republican side, we have Mark Molinaro, the Dutchess County executive, the Republican. It looks like now an April 2nd official launch for his campaign. Is he a factor here?
Oh, absolutely. Look, he's a very attractive candidate. Unlike DeStefano, the Senate number two guy who had declared earlier...
DeFrancisco,
the Senate number two guy who had declared earlier, there is, you know, he doesn't have the same baggage. He's not in the state legislature. People hate the legislature. He's a county executive. He's, by all accounts, he's done quite well in that job. And I think a lot of people are sort of smelling a Pataki-like opponent for the younger Cuomo, just like Pataki defeated his father, Mario. So this could be interesting. It could be a more interesting race. He won't have the same $30 million that Cuomo has in his war chest. But first Cuomo has to get through a primary, and then there'll be a general election. And there are other trials coming up of other Cuomo acolytes. If those people also are shown to have corruption in their souls, it can't be good for Cuomo.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Westchester Board of Legislators approved an Immigration Protection Act this week. A few Republican legislators say the measure puts safety on the line, and some attorneys believe Westchester will become the first county in New York to have such legislation on the books. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
Democratic Westchester County Legislator Virginia Perez says the act prevents individuals from being targeted solely because of their immigration status. Perez chairs the legislation committee.
I'm an immigrant myself, and I'm the only Hispanic on the Board of Legislators. So as a Hispanic immigrant, it means a lot to me, you know, as a resident of the city of Yonkers. But as a Hispanic legislator, as an immigrant legislator, it means the world to me that I'm able to provide this for my community. You know, not everyone is an illegal immigrant.
She says the legislation is not a sanctuary bill, but defines what county law enforcement can ask about a person's citizenship or immigration status and what information the county will share with federal officials. Attorney Vanessa Merton teaches and directs the Immigration Justice Clinic at Pace University School of Law in White Plains. She helped work on the legislation and believes it is the first of its kind.
We are not aware of any other county board of legislators or similar body that has undertaken to clearly disentangle county employees, county personnel, from doing the federal government's job.
Perez says there is a lot of misinformation about the bill.
Some of that misinformation spread around the community is that we have just passed a law to protect criminals.
Peekskill Republican John Testa is Board of Legislators Minority Leader.
It only protects illegal, undocumented residents who find themselves through their own actions in the county jail, and it helps them avoid any kind of interaction with the federal Homeland Security agents as they would normally have in the county jail. And the second thing it does, it's an attempt to eliminate the distinction between legal and illegal immigration.
Again, Perez.
And it makes absolutely no sense. Lawmakers are not going to pass a law to protect those who break the law. You know, this is just to give a sense of security to those hardworking and law-abiding immigrants.
Merton says the Immigrant Protection Act does not render Westchester a sanctuary county, but says that might not matter to U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
Did we just make Westchester a sanctuary county? No, we did not. Could Jeff Sessions lawlessly come after Westchester nonetheless? It would not be a shock, considering this is the county of Hillary Clinton. This is the county of Governor Cuomo, and this is the county where Rob Astorino is still nursing his grudges. So is it quite possible that there might be some kind of action by the Justice Department, albeit completely contrary to law? Yes, that could happen.
Former County Executive Rob Astorino, a Republican, vetoed an earlier version of the bill in 2017. County Executive Latimer, who took office in January, says he will sign it. Again, Testa.
So we just have to sit back now and see how this being enacted will adversely affect our county. I believe we'll be considered and declared a sanctuary jurisdiction under the federal guidelines by the Attorney General.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Mountain Lake PBS held a forum on the dairy crisis this week, covering how historically low milk prices are impacting farmers. It comes at the same time New York U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand announced new legislation aimed at bolstering a safety net that farmers say doesn't work. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
During a conference call Tuesday afternoon, Senator Gillibrand announced her plans to introduce the Dairy Farm Sustainability Act. It would create a floor price and trigger payments to farmers when milk prices drop. The Democrat says too many dairy producers are operating below the cost of production and are on the brink of failure.
This is a crisis for our dairy community, and Congress needs to fix this problem now. And I'm proud to announce that legislation called the Dairy Farm Sustainability Act would reinstate and improve the safety net that worked for our farmers for many years. The price of milk falls below $23 per hundredweight, then the Dairy Farm Stability Act would kick in and make up a portion of the difference. The guaranteed minimum price for milk to ensure that our farmers don't go bankrupt every time prices drop. But the Dairy Farm Sustainability Act also goes a step further than previous dairy programs. The $23 mark would be tied to inflation.
The evening before Gillibrand's announcement, farmers and co-op representatives met in Plattsburgh to participate in a forum on the dairy crisis. Milk prices to dairy farmers have been falling for nearly 4 years, yet operating costs continue to rise. Beekmantown dairy farmer Todd Giroux says the low prices are eating away at any farm equity.
I mean, if you've got a small family operation, rather than be in debt to the bank, they say, we're going to quit while we're behind. But there's some people who can't quit while they're behind because the bank says, well, as long as I'm getting the interest payment, we'll continue to carry it.
Dupree feed and supply owner Rob Dupree noted that local businesses are also affected by the farmers' low prices.
When farmers are feeling the pinch, we all feel the pinch. We're doing everything we can as a business to work with them. You know, when you're getting paid below cost, it's impossible to pay your bills. You know, we stay in contact with them and they work with us and in turn we work with them. But, you know, it affects your receivables and your cash flow too.
New York Farm Bureau Vice President Eric Ohms milks 450 cows on his Chatham farm. He feels that while he and other farmers have done a great job of producing product, the problem is supply management. He expects any help from the federal government to be limited.
At the end of the day, help we get from Washington will be helpful, but it's not gonna change the market dynamics we currently face. It will help on the edges, but it's not gonna guarantee profits for people.
In February, the AgriMark Cooperative sent out its newsletter along with milk checks. It included information on suicide prevention. Vice President Bob Wellington says beyond generating conversation among farmers, it raised awareness about the dairy crisis in the general population.
I think it really brought forth the plight of dairy farming, that we're going through the fourth bad year. Farmers are entirely stressed out. I don't think politicians realized that. I don't think the public realized how bad it was. This letter brought that to light. So they started to discuss some uncomfortable realities that are out there.
The forum will be on air and online at Mountain Lake PBS Friday evening.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Students at Columbia High School in East Greenwich, New York, organized an assembly this week as part of a national day of school walkouts. Several local officials were on hand to speak with students about school safety. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was there.
Students across the country Wednesday paid tribute to the victims of February's shooting that killed 17 at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in South Florida. At Columbia High School in East Greenbush, where 14 years ago a student fired a gun into a hallway, striking a teacher in the leg, students organized an event called We Rise. Wearing an orange T-shirt to mark the event, 17-year-old senior and student council president Lily Hutton said the event is a chance for students to have a voice in the national discussion on school safety.
We have the ability to use our voice, and I will be voting in 2018, and I really think that it's been enough. It was enough 10 years ago, it was enough at Columbine, and it's finally like we're standing up to say that it's enough, we're rising for change.
The assembly continued while the buzzer rang between class periods. While some schools said students protesting would face disciplinary actions, East Greenbush Central School District Superintendent Jeff Simons said students were welcome to attend the assembly, but wouldn't be punished for walking out.
We definitely would prefer students to voice their concerns regarding school safety, to be advocates. This is important to the district in terms of promoting student civic responsibility.
Following a moment of silence for the victims of the shooting 1 month ago, the assembly featured several local officials on both sides of the political aisle. Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul, a Democrat, said there was no place she would rather be than with students in East Greenbush.
Stand up right now and say, we rise, and we rise together. Stand up for the students, stand up for the victims, stand up to end the bloodshed. And you are part of a movement that is changing history. Yes, you are. You can change history.
Hochul recalled the 7,000 pairs of shoes placed upon the Capitol lawn in Washington this week to mark the number of children killed by guns since the 2012 Sandy Hook shooting. She asked the students in East Greenbush to keep those who lost their lives in mind when they head to vote.
You vote in their absence and you never miss an election the rest of your life. And you vote for people who understand that the lives of our children are more important than the NRA.
Also among the speakers was area Republican State Senator Kathy Marchione. Marchione reassured students who may feel threatened of steps the school has taken to ensure student safety. She also touted legislation recently approved by the Senate to address school safety, like bills to fund armed school resource officers and make security upgrades. She did not single out guns as a cause of violence.
I think there's so many more causes. We've always had guns. We have mental health issues that are not being dealt with.
Democrats in the state assembly have passed their own package of reforms, including expanding background checks from 3 to 10 days and a red flag provision that would allow judges to block certain individuals deemed at risk of harming themselves or others from obtaining a weapon. Like what he told the students at the podium, area state assembly Democrat John McDonald said the issues at hand will require dialogue.
Yeah, this is going to need executive leadership in this process, and it's going to need everybody to come together to look at what makes sense.
New York lawmakers passed the gun control measures known as the SAFE Act 5 years ago after Sandy Hook, which continues to divide liberals and conservatives to this day. Students were able to ask questions of the speakers, including their local police chief, and also write letters to those affected by the Parkland shooting. The day of walkouts comes at a time of daily threats, many unfounded, to schools around the region, causing lockdowns and increased security.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1811. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.